Hey, serious privacy enthusiasts. Ready to ace your AI data privacy game?
Oh, you bet, Kay. Dive into the world of TrustArc's Nemity Research, your go-to for staying on top of regulatory developments in AI and privacy.
Seriously, Nemity Research maintains a massive privacy and regulatory database featuring expert guidance and analysis from legal and privacy pros.
So save time on privacy research, cut your compliance timeline, and reduce costs with Nemity Research.
Get your regulatory research and insights at your fingertips with a free trial.
So get ahead in privacy compliance and start that free trial today. Go to trustarc.com/nimity-free-trial.
You're listening to Serious Privacy by TrustArc. Please welcome our hosts, Paul Breitbarth and Kay Royal.
Let us start this podcast episode with a big thank you to all our listeners. What started as a vague idea, wouldn't it be nice if, at the time that Nemity was acquired by TrustArc, now has become one of the most successful privacy podcasts around. In the past 18 months, we have recorded over 70 episodes, and last week we crossed the mark of 40,000 downloads. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And to celebrate this, today we are rejoined by one of our most popular guests from Season 1, Emerald De Leeuw. Our Dutch-Irish friend of the show is Global Head of Privacy at Logitech, and in this episode, we will discuss the setting up and development of a privacy program. Where do you get started? What are the main hurdles? And how different is it when doing so remotely during a pandemic, especially when the whole world needs your products to be available to work from home? My name is Paul Breitbarth.
And I'm Kay Royal, and welcome to Serious Privacy. Emerald, thank you so much for coming back and joining us today. I don't know if Paul mentioned it, but we had this topic come up and we're like, ooh, who can we get to cover this topic? And you immediately came to mind. So thank you. All right. Unexpected question. Are we ready?
Never.
I hope so.
What surprised you today?
Ooh, what surprised me today? That's actually a really good question. Still going, right? I think it's been for everyone across the world. And by we are still going, I mean us as human beings here on this podcast, still doing our thing, getting up with gusto and doing our jobs. I guess for people who ended up without employment. But I think the fortitude of people has really continues to surprise me and leave me in awe every day. I think we need a moment of appreciation for everybody who still gets up and takes care of their families and does all of the things and goes to work. Or not, and still keeps going. Well, that's a bit of a grim answer, wasn't it?
Still, it's very true.
It's okay. It's a real answer. And what about you? What surprised you? Well, I heard one thing that surprised you, Durant. The guidance that just came out.
Really? What is that? I don't know what you heard that surprised me today. There is new guidance on using codes of conduct for international transfers, and that was supposed to be adopted last Thursday, so I've been refreshing the website of the European Data Protection Board for 5 days now, and finally it's here.
It surprised you, but yeah, not your answer.
No, not really. No, there are two things that surprised me. In continuing on Emerald's answer, the fact that actually apologized for screwing up the relaxation of COVID measures. 2 weeks ago, we were, and suddenly the infection spiked, and not just a little, but to numbers of cases. And they finally said in Parliament today, yeah, we should have been more careful. So that is one thing that surprised me. Personal note, what surprises me, and still even started packing my bags because I'm traveling tomorrow. Yeah, I'm much more organized than packing my...
Oh, goodness. Paul is taking too much after me now. They say the longer you're, the more you're like someone, so...
Even with an ocean in between.
Exactly.
That will give me anxiety. I'm one of these, like, pack 2 weeks in advance and overpack 2 weeks in advance.
Oh, gosh, yes.
That's me, too. Usually that's me, too. And maybe I've just lost the habit of packing a bag because I haven't traveled for so long.
Oh, I'm very jealous. I'd love to be traveling. Sounds amazing.
Yes, and I will say what surprised me was Arizona woke up this morning to a horrible monsoon and flash flood warnings. So I'm having a pool installed. It's installed. They finally came yesterday to clear out the dirt they had to dig up and the tree stumps and everything that's just been filling up the yard. And so, of course, they cleared our entire yard, which was a flat dirt expanse, and now it's a huge mud puddle that my labradoodles are thoroughly enjoying.
So now you have a mud pool, which is very healthy.
You know, you got to look for the silver linings. Emerald, you posted pictures of your bathroom that was remodeled and said you're starting on your kitchen next. My kitchen just finished. No, the laundry room.
Yeah, the utility room. Yeah, so I did nothing. I'm just taking credit for it. Totally.
That's the next room on my list to do is the utility room. So the kitchen is done and it looks fantastic. Some painting on the tabletop that's going to be really weird and abstract. So we're finishing that. That's the last thing to do. And yes, a lot of this is probably going to be cut out of the podcast because Paul is sitting there rolling his eyes going, I don't want to hear about Kay's table. Actually, we're documenting this whole thing because we tried to do acrylic.
Oh, I bought a kit. I've not used it yet, but it's on the list.
Everything we messed up, we didn't find in any of the helpful videos. So I have pictorial documents of how the normal person would mess up this process. All right, let's get to the actual privacy.
Okay, before we start turning into a DIY podcast, that's spinoff number two.
At least it's not a cooking show.
Well, exactly. That is our other spinoff. Serious Privacy Cooking, Serious Privacy DIY, and then we also get Serious Privacy for Geeks with all the Harry Potter and cosplay stuff.
The cosplayers, got to bring that back. It's got to happen. I mean, with the new Black Widow movies out.
One day we'll be media entrepreneurs.
I'm game. I'll be
so
there.
So for now,
it will happen.
Let's start talking about building a privacy program.
Okay.
Emerald, what did you find when you joined Logitech? Was there already something, or did you have to start from scratch? Or did you want to start?
There was already work done. Of course, Logitech had to comply with the GDPR, and I think it was very similar to what we've seen in loads of companies, and you no doubt have seen in your day-to-day as well, speaking to loads of different organizations. Is a lot of organizations looked at privacy as kind of equivalent to GDPR initially. So I think with that coming in, I was a second hire on the privacy team at Logitech. I was the global head of privacy at the time. So I was kind of coming in as like a European law expert, but I've since had to diversify for obvious reasons. So yeah, so there was definitely stuff there, but I think what I've been really focusing on is scale, and also longevity and sustainability of what you create. Because I think what's great, most people now, in a broad sense, they know what to do, right? Records of processing. We know we often need consent. We know that we need to comply with cookie legislation. We know all of this stuff. Most people in privacy know this. It's it's not rocket science, right? You could probably Google it. And to become compliant with the big privacy laws of the world, no doubt you'll find some okay information and some probably not okay, but we won't talk about that. Yeah, that's a story for another day, I think. But we could do a whole episode on bad privacy advice found through search engines.
We could.
But yeah, I think that my focus has been very much on, I guess, building capabilities over people capacity. You know, it's great. Of course, we all want an army of people, but I'm not on an ego trip where I need 50 direct reports in order to feel okay about myself. Though if I don't think that's can to an extent automate, you can't automate privacy. So let's just put that out there. You can't automate it. No matter who tells you can automate everything, you can't. But you can automate.
Oh my gosh. I actually had a conversation with a reporter one time who, this was last year, and someone had advertised automating data discovery to respond to individual rights requests or something, or to fill out the data inventory or whatever. And I told him, look, I don't care who tells you how simple it is, automating it, it ain't simple.
It's not simple, but...
And it doesn't work.
But some technologies are getting better at either one of those, but not all, usually not all at once. So I think if anyone's listening, if you want to go build that, I'm really interested. I think everybody would love data discovery that also populates your Article 30 records of processing and fulfills your data subject rights requests and can auto-redact stuff that needs redacting and do all the things. But yeah.
So you're not asking for much, Emerald.
No.
and flags it if changing or removing it would break the underlying database, or flagging it if the deletion meets one of the requirements. I mean, we have the tools that do different things along that way, but there is no one holistic end-to-end system that is automated that someone can just say, okay, let me load this into my system, press the button and go, woohoo, it's all done. No.
Yeah, and there's security concerns around that as well, right? Like, you know, you don't want just any type of tech crawling all of your systems and having the ability. It's a thing. But I think that's been a focus of mine. Like, of course, we are a global company. We are, I think, way bigger than people might assume. And I think we've often operated as if we were smaller than we actually are. But I think even Logitech now is a very different company than it was when I first joined Logitech, because the pandemic did like create a really big growth in our organization. Like, it made headlines, that type of growth. It was a little bit mad. So that created...
So tell us a bit more about that, because I think the average listener, including myself, knows you from keyboards, mice, and webcams.
Absolutely. But
yes, of which I have all of them right here, right now.
So basically that would mean that the amount of data that you would process is some sales data and some employee data. But I'm sure I'm wrong about that.
Yes and no. Of course, we have that data too. And for good reason. But Logitech is a multi-brand business, right? When you go to our website, you'll see the different logos on there. So there's companies like Jaybird, Ultimate Ears, Streamlabs, which is a super interesting acquisition from, I think, 2 years ago, which allows you to basically go live on Twitch and YouTube and do various things like that. But in addition to that, like, even our mice and keyboards facilitate other things. Example of that would be Playmaster, which is a piece of software that allows you to become better at Counter-Strike by checking kind of, you know, how you perform. So there's obviously data involved and in ensuring that you actually build your skills. And again, it's nothing that would immediately pique your like alarm, oh, this is super creepy, but with that comes data. And it's not for any reasons, like, we're not data brokers or anything like that, but there's still way more there than one would assume. And there is obviously, as we grow as a business, more of an interest in creating more software to make our products better and be better for the people who use them.
That's indeed quite different. Most people would probably realize. So if automation is not the answer to, or not the sole answer to building a program, where do you start?
Well, I think every privacy professional at the moment, if they're truly honest with themselves, are asking themselves that question, right? Because there's so much happening, and you could say everything is a priority. And I think if you look at the history of the word priority, I think it was never intended to be plural. I think the etymology of the word priority was supposed to be singular. And I think we all started saying, you know, these are our priorities. And I think that's probably practical. But I don't think you can have, you know, 20. That's too many. I think you need to break it down. And at least this is how I did it. I kind of did a bit happening in the world sort of analysis. And then I basically, like, what is happening in the company analysis. And then I figured, okay, I need a roadmap, and that roadmap needs to be reasonably flexible because things change all the time. But I think for the next 3 years, these should be the projects we work on. And those projects might shift and they might change depending on what happens in privacy. If there's another like Schrems 2 bomb that goes off, you know, that might change things again. But I think that's kind of how I approached it. So what's happening in the world, what's happening in the company, where do I think the risks, the big ticket items would be, the big risks, what do I think is the most important? Because like I said, Logitech is 40 years old this year, so it is a reasonably mature company, so I like wasn't walking into nothing. But at the same time, we grew, so with that, our scale of our privacy program needs to grow as well and needs to be able to adapt to that change.
So how do you ensure you are aware of what is happening in the company and that people involve you early on?
I think there's a couple, there's obviously dependencies there, right? So the first thing, and you hear this all the time, but I think leadership needs to be on board with privacy. And I think one thing that I've always loved about working at Logitech is, and one of the things that really attracted me to coming to work, is that It's very much a company that is always looking to do the right thing. And you can see this in our sustainability efforts, right? So, for example, we carbon label some of our products now. So if you buy a mouse, there'll be a sticker on it and it will say your carbon impact is whatever. So you can think of the same with privacy, mm-hmm. right? Like we could eventually say, hey, why don't we privacy label things? And I know you do that with a privacy policy, but let's be honest, there are probably more user-friendly ways to do that. And kind of similar to what Apple has done with its nutrition labels, I guess, in a kind of say this kind of, you know, the cost to your privacy and the benefits provided to you, that kind of thing. So leadership, top-down support, absolutely essential, but that's essential for any goal you have in any company. So that's not really, you know, surprising. I think the next thing is to make sure you have various touch points in the business, whether that's through your own team, but also, like, we're part of a legal team. They talk often to everyone. Like, legal has the benefit that it can't be too siloed, because every mm-hmm. department will usually have some engagement with legal in order to get things live. So using your relationships yes. with your own teammates is amazing, and they're fantastic people, and usually you'll have allies in your own company, right? No matter where you are, you should talk to people and say, hey, you know, if you hear anything that you think we should know about, then maybe connect the team to us or just bring us into a meeting like that. And then I would say I am a very shameless campaigner for privacy, like absolutely shameless. Like I will just ask, can I come into staff meetings and kind of talk about the privacy strategy? And people say yes. It surprises me every day. I should have had that as my surprise. But usually when you ask for help, people will help you. So whether that's going into, you know, where all of the engineers are or where the marketing people are, where, you know, whichever business group in your company it is, it makes sense if everyone's in the same room and you kind of say, hey, we're thinking about privacy for the whole company. Obviously, we can't make the whole decision about what the strategy should be. Like, we're just one team. This should be a company-wide effort. And we would love to get you on board and tell you about what we do. And, you know, you can come to us for all of these things if you need help. So kind of like a little mini, I guess, awareness and campaign for your own department. And then there's the common things that you hear about a lot, right? Like, you know, privacy, where in each business group you have your privacy person and you meet on a regular basis. But I think you kind of need all of them. And then the last one I would say is your own team, your own little privacy unit. They need to be also campaigning and making sure that those relationships are built. So I can give an example of that. So this for us happened somewhat organically, but you'll often find that certain people are assigned to certain teams for privacy. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying this is exactly how we do it, but what you could do is, you know, for hardware companies that have some software, you assign one person. For gaming, you assign one person and you do it that way. That way you might get a seat at the staff meetings of that team, or you might play it that way. But the key thing is to know what's going on and get as many people involved as you can to get the message out.
Yeah, I think that is really important. But of course, that is all easier if you can just walk into a meeting in office. How do you do that when everything suddenly moves online?
It's a great question. And I can't say that I found it more difficult. I would love to tell you that I did. But I think the one thing that the whole pandemic didn't need to travel as much as I did, because I was never home. I was everywhere all of the time at every conference. I was there, the chats, particularly with Paul in Brussels. So I'm just annoying him at his stand because I...
Cocktails overdue. Still cocktails overdue.
Yeah, I know. We will get there. It will happen. And now we have to do it. Because with the pandemic, I think we've all kind of learned to appreciate in-person engagement so much more than we probably initially did. But I'm probably the wrong person to ask, right? Like, we're a company that sells video conferencing equipment. We sell microphones, webcams. We were always quite flexible with where you worked, even pre-pandemic. No one was dragging you into the office. It was like, if you want to work from home, okay. So it was always, we weren't completely thrown in at the deep end. But I think the same disciplines apply, right? You just need to set up regularity to your meetings. I think a regular cadence to meeting the people you need to know is really important. So just get it in the calendar, say repeat monthly, and then just make it happen.
You actually are reminding me of my off the calendar. I need to go check those.
Yeah, and I think it's just really important that you try as much as you can to replicate what you would have usually done. Serendipity, I'm afraid, is a little bit out the window, but to a degree, you do create your own luck and opportunities. I think within a business, there are things you can do to make your life easier. And one of those things is just to reach out to people, like send the first email, try to reach out to people you haven't met yet. Particularly, I know lots of tech companies have grown quite a bit, obvious reasons, right? People were at home all the time. They needed more tech. They were trying to keep their life going or be entertained or play games or do whatever it is that they were doing. I think loads of people in your company might be new. They might not have friends. They might want to meet you. So you can go into your, I don't know, most people probably have this kind of system and see the whole organizational structure and just click on a person and see whoever reports to them and their job titles and things. I find that super useful because it's often hard to find the exact person you need, but building your network can make sure you hear things and also help you navigate your big corporation if that is where you work.
Yeah, absolutely. I've always counted it as a measure of success, and I still use it when people ask, when you start getting those messages or texts that say, oh, you need to come to room 532 in building C right now. And when you walk in, nobody's surprised you're there, but somebody was thinking privacy. Somebody realized they were discussing something you needed to be, and somebody reached out to you. And the fact that when you show up, nobody in the room is surprised you're there tells you that they've accepted this as part of the process. They might not think about it.
They might not like it.
Right. They might not like it. They might not think about it in advance, but you're part of the process. Someone thought of you. It's almost like needing a cardboard cutout of you in every room.
Yeah. So how is it for you currently as our in-house privacy program lead? Did you notice a lot of change with everybody spreading out around the world and starting to work from home?
There was change in the way that people worked, but I wouldn't say that there was a loss of effectiveness in getting our privacy program management. I would say that that in itself was fine because, as Emerald says, working remote, I mean, I know there are old school lawyers who think that if you're not in the office, you're not getting anything done. But I've worked remote for many, many years. And I will say that there are people who do better at those water cooler conversations. And so maybe there was some loss of efficiency there in how people work, but it didn't really impact the privacy program and what we needed to do.
Well, that's at least comforting.
Yeah, and we have jobs that lend themselves well, right, to be remote. Like we don't need, like, let's say 3D printers or crazy design equipment or things like that. So I think...
No, we need a laptop and a webcam and a keyboard.
Exactly, largely anyway. And I think that's been really helpful, but also... what I found just helpful in general is we're very lucky. Privacy is a human activity. It relates to you, the person. And once you, about you, people completely get it. You can just say, right. Because often, like, I've yet to meet a person who had, like, really bad intent. Like, has not happened in my career.
I've met a few of those, but it's okay. I bore them.
I really met them and they haven't told me the truth. That could also be a thing. But
I will say that there was a company I was at that I was the privacy and security officer, and I was moved. I was like a lonely duck. I reported to legal, but I was a one person department. And so when they needed to shift offices, you know, I got the boot. And so I went from the floor, which was all the executives, down to a different floor, which was a huge office. They tried to make this up to me. What they didn't realize, and this was at another company where I was privacy counsel, having that hallway walk-by interaction with the executive level is huge. As they, you don't get time with them on a regular basis. And I will say that is one thing that in most companies, prior companies I would say that would have been a big losing that casual interaction. So going remote would have lost that companies. With TrustArc, that wasn't an impact. we have access to executive assistants. But in some of these companies, losing that casual interaction, water cooler interaction with executives was a huge loss.
Yeah, I can see that. Like, I've been very, very lucky because obviously when I initially kind of, I pitched the strategy, like, as part of having this role, I didn't just kind of decide that I needed to determine what the strategy was. Like, who am I? I was kind of like a blow-in, right? Like, in a company that's almost 4 years old, who am I to say what the strategy should be? So if you come at it like that, like, I think your privacy strategy for in a global company needs to also depend on what the executives want and have planned, right? You can't just say this is the law. Of course you need to comply with the law. That's the basis. That's basic stuff. But like, you might want to be the most privacy friendly company in the world and do loads of extra things and, you know, be really progressive in privacy. Or that might not be. Not every company is the same in that, even though most companies, at least I would hope, will at the very bare minimum want to comply. And I think executive leadership, if you ask, sometimes you might have to wait a while for your meeting. But I've never heard, no, I won't meet you. I've not heard that yet. So knock on wood, hopefully that stays that way. But I think it is very helpful to know what they're thinking. And also so you can plan.
I will say that the pass by you at one of the companies, my office was in the hives and the rest of the company. There were two exits from the main and then back to the kitchen area with everyone else. So they were constantly passing by my office to the kitchen, to the bathroom, to go to other departments, whatever. I put a new comic or cartoon on my office door every week, a new one. And that made everyone going to see the executives and every executive who passed the hallway, including board of directors, stop and read. So that casual privacy and security training done in a way that they didn't even realize they were learning. And, you know, it was probably one for every 8 or 9 people would stop and start up a conversation based on the cartoon. And so that was fun. That was fun.
Maybe we can do those like on Zoom. It won't be the same, right?
No, it's not the same. But I was going to say, you could post it as your picture, I guess, and turn your camera off and have that as the picture that they see when you come on. That might be one way of doing it.
But if it would really trigger the conversation, I'm not sure.
It might trigger a conversation, but not the conversation you might necessarily want to have.
Okay, true.
So going remote doesn't affect or impact the effectiveness or the efficiency of the program. You lose some things that you might have been doing in person, but you gain efficiency in other things that you can't do in person now. Not to mention your job got bigger because now your company deployed hundreds and thousands of remote offices, quickly and over a week's time. So you have that. So you may have done a program evaluation and your strategy that you helped develop and roll out. How did it change or did it?
I think the change came more with the growth of the company itself, not necessarily with the going remote thing. Like, I think for me particularly, we had our end of year, the results kind of came out, loads of people were being hired, there was loads of new products, loads of activities, and with new products and activities, often you might start needing to start anticipating different types of data collection and certainly different type of scale. So with that comes often an adjustment in your strategy, right? So you might need to prioritize or at least get prepared for different types of activities. And this means often loads of boring stuff, right? Like, people often think these days anyway, this is new. This is like since GDPR that privacy is like super cool all the time. But a lot very operational, very process driven, and process becomes even more important when a company grows and building that, I guess, infrastructure for compliance, which is absolutely critical, but not the most exciting thing in the world, but it is something that I've been really focused on with my very lucky, brilliant people on my team, particularly things like the program management skills, right? Like, I'm not a PM. I think lawyers usually, please lawyers don't be insulted by this, but often are very good at and putting out fun, but not always as good at project managing and transformational projects. So I want to get big ticket items achieved. That's my goal. And
oh, I'll readily admit I'm not good at project management.
Not either, which is why I was very lucky that when I first joined Logitech, my former boss, to say which type of person I thought would be the most important next hire to be a senior PM. So that's what we did.
Oh, absolutely.
And I had that experience, right, from running privacy programs in the past. I think it's the perfect combination. If you're not a big company, privacy expert plus PM is a good amount. Like, you're not all the way there,
yes,
but you're going. You're going, yes, in a structured fashion, which is an important thing.
You need an operational project management person that's just going to keep things moving and make sure that everything is managed right. Yeah, absolutely agree.
And keeps me honest, absolutely, right? Like, I don't know.
I think now they're kind of calling these people chiefs of staff rather than, you know, the project operational management people. I think that we're seeing a lot more privacy or security or cybersecurity or chief of staff.
Did you by chance see the Microsoft vacancy?
I did see the Microsoft vacancy. I did.
Judy Brill is looking for it.
I'm binging West Wing right now.
Yeah,
it's top of mind. I think that's kind of cool, this chief of staff position that recognizes that this operational project manager, keep you honest, keep things moving kind of person really is a major part of the team.
I don't know why.
Okay, Josh Lyman or Sam Seaborn?
I'll take Josh.
I think I'm more of a Sam. Emerald, have you ever watched West Wing?
No, we have the DVDs at home. I'm just being put off by how many seasons there are.
Don't be.
Harry Potter, so.
There are not enough seasons. That is the problem with
there,
it.
There is not enough seasons. I have to admit that, but really was one of my favorite shows. And I will tell you that West Wing, when my husband and I met, and I think I've mentioned this online back way before it was cool, I wouldn't give him my phone number to talk. So we were constantly chatting, I think on like Yahoo Messenger or something. And I wasn't responding to him on chat. And I said, well, it's because I'm watching Buffy, the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah.
And he said, he said that he watches West Wing. And I'd never seen West Wing, and it was on the next night. So I watched it, and he had, of course, given me his phone number. Said, I promise not to look at caller ID. And I'm like, I don't know about that. And I watched the first episode of West Wing and picked up the phone and called him and was like, that literally, he said hello. And I said, I've never seen West Wing. That was pretty cool. And he went, this is a Southern accent. Is this Kay? I'm like, yep. So West Wing kind of brought us together. That was our movement into speaking to each other. It took another month before we met in person.
That is a great story. And I can see how West Wing has meaning to you.
It does.
It is a good series.
The marriage has lasted longer than the series did, though.
Yes.
Need more episodes of West Wing.
Well, maybe back to privacy with a final question, Emerald. Anybody starting out to build a program, joining a company, however big or small, what tips do you have for them?
What's the first thing they need to do? What do they have to accomplish?
Say first, understand the fundamentals, both from a privacy standpoint and of the business. Without the fundamentals, you're nowhere. And it's so easy to go down the rabbit hole, right? Like, I think we're all guilty of this. I don't want to speak for you guys, but I know I am and definitely have been in the past. You know, there's a big ruling, won't name anyone in particular. And we all kind of go, oh, we should probably not focus on the one problem. If you don't have your fundamentals, you're just swimming in risk, right? So that's not good. So you need to understand the data in the company. You need to understand the players in the company. And if all has gone well prior to your hiring, you already have fundamentals of privacy, so you're good. You know you need to figure out, you know, what data is there. And then the next thing I would do is, yeah, and this relates to the fundamentals, is making sure that you get to at least compliant data collection, right? Whether that's through ensuring that everything that is happening in your online presence is at least done in very, because it's not good if for your company and your whole reputation, your reputation and the business's reputation is if you go to the website and, you know, like a billion cookies are dropped without consent. And it's like one of those scroll things with legitimate interest. I cannot. You know, the ones that have like 500 different cookies and you need to switch them off individually and you're kind of losing the will to live and you just want to see the website. That can't be a thing. So making sure that you understand the current landscape, I think that's critical. And the next thing I would do, and I think some of that can happen in 30 days, maybe not, depends on the site company, right? So I would make sure you get a handle on that. You can definitely not do everything that I just mentioned in 30 days. You know,
no, but you do need to do an assessment of what you are. You need to find out what data there is, what resources there are, and what the company's doing.
Yeah, exactly. Where it's going. So I would definitely make sure you go and meet as many people as you can, because that will also say long term, because you want to not do all the work and then have new things launch that still don't comply. And then you're constantly doing retro work. You can't be always looking back. Then the next thing I would do is, if you're not directly reporting to leadership, talk to leadership and your plan and ambitions, because based on what you've just done your first 30 days or however many days it took you to do, is to tell people what the strategy is and see how they feel about that and see if you need to adjust. Because you might not have the full picture based on that, right? Like, at least my experience is that there's always strategy happening in the business. Executive leadership is not thinking about today. They thought about today a year ago, if not longer ago, and the launch that's currently happening was a long time in the making. So you need to know, where is it going? And I think, and this is something that I'm still working on, and I think it's a really important skill, but you need to develop some strategic thinking if you're leading a program, if you're the one who's tasked with making sure that the people whose data you're collecting are okay, the company from a compliance point of view is okay. And that strategic thinking is something that doesn't always immediately come to mind when you think of privacy. No. I think everyone's getting certifications or going back to school, and you need to do all of those things too. School and certifications are a good thing for everybody, and making sure you up and continue learning is fantastic. But I think the skill like strategy, personally, I think some people just have great flair for it. I'm not necessarily one of those people. I have to work really hard on being good at that and read and understand and listen to how other people approach their disciplines, strategize. But I think making sure of what you've just built is something that I would also focus.
And you've said something very, very important, because it's been said recently, and I think we're starting to see more chatter, that the GDPR opened the door for privacy to gain a seat at the table. And they thought they were going to see the transformation where security got a seat at the table and CISOs, and somehow or another, privacy has missed it. Now, I think we have so many other opportunities coming up. I don't think it's gone forever. But I think it's because we have focused, many privacy people focus on that program in the operational and the skills, and they don't realize they need to push themselves to that next level of the business savvy and the strategy and actually working with the company to grow rather than just protecting the data. An integral part of the company. And I think that might be a key step that privacy people just simply aren't focusing on, because we're focusing on the data.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I'm sure that that's not true everywhere, though, that we missed our shot. I find that
I'm not convinced we did. I'm just saying there's chatter. I'm not convinced we did.
Yeah, and I think that's probably true in some companies, and I think we definitely have further to go. But I think the thing that we really need to work on as an industry is to get across that we're not the people who just say no. You know what I mean? We're the people who...
Exactly.
But there are ways to do things that comply with the law and are not creepy. There's ways of doing this very well. There's differential privacy, which, you know, helps with at least getting some value, what is being put out into the market, without intruding on a person's personal sphere, which is kind of a nice thing. Technologies that we can use, we can look at tokenization and things like that. There's things we can do. And I think that people just need to understand the privacy professionals you know are fountains of knowledge who can help you achieve your business goals without you eventually, you know, your head being on the chopping block because something terrible happened. Because at the end of the day, you still work for a company, right? Like it's not as if we are there to hurt the business. That's not our job. Our job is to make sure that we do right by everyone involved. So all stakeholders. So the business, but also the people that our business depends on. Because if you don't look after them, you have no business. So I think there's just been a lot of media that hasn't helped us, right? It's like, no, this can't happen anymore. All transfers are suspended. No one knows what's happening. And everyone's just going, oh my God, now I have to go talk to privacy and I don't want to talk to them and all of the things. So I think this is just kind of like a campaign that we as privacy professionals need to have and go like, we are your friend. We can help.
Yes.
And on that note, we end another episode of Serious Privacy. Thank you very much, Emerald, for joining us this week. And thank you to all our listeners, again, for listening to all of our episodes, and especially this episode of Serious Privacy. If you like our episodes, please do tell your friends and colleagues about us and rate and review our episodes in your favorite podcast application or on your favorite podcast platform. Should you have any questions or suggestions, and especially if you would like to be a guest, please reach out to us via seriousprivacy@trustark.com or via Twitter @podcastprivacy. You will find Kay on Twitter as Heart of Privacy, and myself as Europol B. Until next week, goodbye. Like our episodes, please do tell your friends and colleagues about us and rate and review our episodes in your favorite podcast application or on your favorite podcast platform. Should you have any questions or suggestions, and especially if you would like to be a guest, please reach out to us via seriousprivacy@trustark.com or via Twitter @podcastprivacy. You will find Kay on Twitter as Heart of Privacy and myself as Europol B. Until next week, goodbye.
Bye, y'all.
That was Serious Privacy.
And on that note, we end another episode of Serious Privacy. Thank you very much, Emerald, for joining us this week. And thank you to all our listeners, again, for listening to all of our episodes, and especially this episode of Serious Privacy. If you like our episodes, please do tell your friends and colleagues about us and rate and review our episodes in your favorite podcast application or on your favorite podcast platform. Should you have any questions or suggestions, and especially if you would like to be a guest, please reach out to us via seriousprivacy@trustark.com or via Twitter @podcastprivacy. You will find Kay on Twitter as Heart of Privacy and myself as Europol B. Until next week, goodbye. Privacy.
Hey listeners, looking to navigate the realm of responsible AI data privacy governance? Well, look no further.
Absolutely. TrustArc is paving the way, offering a complete approach to managing privacy risks in the world of AI.
TrustArc allows organizations to confidently use AI with personal or sensitive data, moving forward efficiently and cost-effectively.
And here's the kicker. Protect your company and data with TrustArc's privacy-driven compliance software.
Because their deep automation streamlines data privacy governance, cutting your time to compliance with automated data mapping, risk assessments, and regulatory reporting.
TrustArc's enhancements go way beyond that, helping organizations understand AI better and align cross-functionally on data governance, privacy, and security.
Plus, they provide guidance on privacy governance for AI and how to mitigate risks using frameworks like NIST AI, OECD AI, and the NIMACY Privacy Management Accountability Framework.
If you're aiming for compliance excellence, check out Privacy Central, seriously one of my best parts. It uses automation and privacy expertise to understand your requirements, build and manage your privacy program with ease.
Oh, I agree. Privacy Central is your go-to to measure your progress toward responsible AI data compliance.
Stay ahead with TrustArc's Privacy Central. Visit TrustArc.com now. Ask me and Paul if you have any questions.